The all-new Bernstein and Rahimi Show. Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Everybody's your friend.
I try.
Smart, funny, and friendly sports talk for your workday.
Every caller is an idiot.
Dan Bernstein.
I will murder your whole effing family.
Layla Rahimi.
I don't think that jerk cares, actually.
Bernstein and Rahimi.
Hashtag bless.
9 a.m. to noon.
My God, that's Layla Rahimi's music.
On Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Hearing dreams and nightmares, it is indeed. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Ian Happ is going to join us at 9:40. We've got plenty of Bears talk with things going on and coaching staffs being put together. Midday Midway at 10:40. Mark Schanowski will talk Bulls at 11, and there will be surprises along the way. 312-644-6767. That's the number at WSCR The Score. We call that the Score Listener Line. It's powered by BetQL. Bet smarter. Beat the books. Download the BetQL app today, or visit betql.com. Send us an email, BernsteinRahimi at 670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live. We're streaming at 670thescore.com. You can also text the text zone. It's brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. You text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Our Twitter feed is at BernsteinRahimi. She's at Layla Rahimi. I am at Dan_Bernstein. Download the radio.com app. That way you can stream The Score on your mobile devices. Interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. And get a look at us, too. Hey, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore is the Twitch stream. Brian Gertsch directs that, and he moderates the chat. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer. Jordan Malley is the guy on the board. Who decided to interview Mike Singletary?
Was it a culture coach?
No, but seriously. No, right, Jackie.
Are we still doing that?
No, honest question. Whose call is that?
So, I mean, that's a good question, because you don't think that's a Nagy Pace call, do you? That's a organizational call?
Collaboration, right? Is this look, the guy can't coach. He was a good player. Want to say he was a great player? That's fine. There are some people on that team that would get angry with you, who always thought, hey, there were other guys doing the work in front of him more than he was doing the work behind them. But that's neither here nor there. It's a 62-year-old guy who's tried to coach and has failed. We know this. We know the reasons why. We know what's gone wrong. We know what hasn't happened, all the communication problems and everything else. What are they doing? Why are they doing? Come on. No. A hard pass on that.
Here's where I sit with this, and I said this to you in the pre-show meeting, is we were like, it's cool. The White Sox are just doing Tony La Russa a favor. Like, it's a customary interview. And the next thing we know, that's not really the case. So I think we have to take it seriously, just based on my previous paranoia alone, or perhaps dismissive attitude, if you will.
It's probably good advice that I'm not going to take. I can't fathom. I mean, I can't argue with you, but the difference was there was a point in time when Tony La Russa was considered an excellent manager, if not the very best manager. There has never been a point in time where Mike Singletary has been considered a good coach. That's the major difference.
You're right about that. And I said this before. Tony La Russa is the cause, or at least part of the cause, of one of my greatest sports defeats in my life, perhaps the greatest, which isn't lost on me, but it gives me respect for the guy. As far as Singletary is concerned, here's why this is a point of discussion. It's because you remember how Matt Nagy said to us after the Saints game that they took 15 minutes of valuable practice time to talk about CJ Gardner-Johnson. When you see these NFL assistants being hired away, even on their own team, and everything is moving around you in a coaching perspective, those 15 minutes or that interview with Singletary is valuable time too.
I guess it is. I mean, they want to get a range, and I'm sure somebody has already texted this or said that, Bernstein, you're the guy who says interview everybody. And I am, because my belief is open jobs are opportunities to do due diligence on the best and the brightest minds from other teams. That whether, no matter what the position is, cast a wide net, because it's a free look. You get free intelligence elsewhere just to say, how do you do this? Or I'm going to present you with a problem. How would you solve this based on your experience? And that kind of information gathering without tampering and without corporate spying is incredibly valuable. And that's why the Singletary thing's a waste of time, because the guy's been out of the league. The guy, he's been coaching high school. Like, if you're going to do that, like you say, that time does matter. But go find some assistant, even if you don't plan on hiring him, get a free look at what a rival is doing. You know, there are ways to strategically employ this valuable time where talking to Singletary gets you nowhere.
Yeah. 2016 was the last time he was in the league, and that was with the Rams. And I checked to see if by chance that overlapped when with Wade Phillips was there, and he was just before. So Phillips was there in 2017, which seems like it was 20 years ago, but it was not. But 16 for Singletary, given how the NFL coaching circles go, that's a significant amount of time given how much the game has changed since then.
And again, even when he was coaching, it wasn't successful. And we talked to Brian Billick years ago. I'm trying to remember exactly how he put it. But Terry and I were talking our regular time with Billick, and he was trying to explain Singletary's problems as a coach. And if I remember correctly, he said sometimes he speaks in what I call Singletary ease that only he understands. I mean, and that is really damning when you have another coach, I mean, usually in the fraternity, nobody ever says anything like that. Nobody ever comes out and actually criticizes a fellow coach, because it's generally just not done, especially when the guy worked on his staff. And when he says that he has that sort of communications barrier where players don't understand what he's saying, like, that's not a deal breaker. That's not enough to say maybe we should get a coach whose players actually do understand what he's saying. Maybe start there first. I don't know. Maybe my reaction is because the day was so strange and it was so emotional and everything was kind of untethered from reality. And I saw it, I couldn't believe it. And then I wanted to see if it was a fake account. And no, it was the actual Score account that was tweeting out the fact the Bears are interviewing him.
Can't do it.
That's still the best. Like, still the one of the best pieces of audio in the modern sports era, man. You can't argue with that. He is a drop all-timer.
Oh, that is
absolutely okay. Vernon, just it was something that I told everybody at the very beginning of the week. I will not tolerate players that think it's about them when it's about the team. And we cannot make decisions that cost the team and then come off the sideline and it's nonchalant. No. You know what? This is how I believe, okay? I'm from the old school. I believe this. I would rather play with 10 people and just get penalized all the way until we got to do something else, rather than play with 11 when I know that right now that person is not sold out to be a part of this team. It is more about them than it is about the team. I cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners. I want people that want to win.
All right, great. That's not what football coaching is anymore. And even if you like the guy, and even if you get like, and I don't know if you think you're just pandering to the fan base, most of that fan base is dead. I mean, if you're talking about people who still like, you know, the 85 Bears and Ditka and all this stuff, I mean, really, if it's, I just think that's also misreading the room. If you're doing it to say 85 Bears, yay, let's forge a connection with that. I mean, I don't think a significant portion of the fan base is going to be swayed by that. And most everybody's rolling their eyes.
I would tend to agree with you. But when I saw Tony La Russa being interviewed, I saw a lot of winning ugly references that came across my Twitter feed and our text line. Those people are still hanging. We did just reference Ferris Bueller, after all. And by the way, text line. I did not know there were so many people who hated Ferris Bueller. I am fascinated.
Yeah, right. It's probably like exactly what Mully's saying is North Shore resentment, just because John Hughes in that movie does a perfect job of depicting. Like, I want to say the actual house, Cameron's house. I think it's in Riverwoods. I'm pretty sure. I think
as
it's
somebody
in Riverwoods.
Who's not, as somebody who's not from here, I think it had more to do with, like, this kid just getting away with everything. Like, this twerp just got away with everything. The one 80s movie that I could never understand was Pretty in Pink. Oh, and Say Anything. Pretty in Pink made a little more sense. But Say Anything, no clue. Watched it a million times, have no idea what they're trying to convey there.
Yeah, I didn't understand the whole John Mahoney, like, corruption subplot thing. That I didn't get. Say Anything's a weird movie. It really is.
If somebody on the text line wants to spend about 20 texts to explain to me Say Anything, I would appreciate it.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you. I never understood really what the deep allure of that movie was. But when you really boil it down, isn't Ferris Bueller just basically 2 hours of white privilege, pretty much?
I mean, it's 2 hours it's 2 hours of a twerp getting away with a lot of things.
That's
like
what I mean.
If you're an older sister from any ethnicity, you understand that that's a scene that you're familiar with. You're like, what? Come on, I hate you. The best scene in Ferris Bueller's where Jennifer Grey's talking to Charlie Sheen, and then in the background you hear Shauna.
Mm-hmm.
We've totally gone off the deep end. But if we're going to go 80s and we talk about Tony La Russa and we're talking about Singletary, we might as well bring this back up.
I guess we are. But at least at one point, La Russa was good at his job. He knew what he was doing. He was celebrated. He was a Hall of Famer as a manager. Mike Singletary's famous because he's just like a bug-eyed maniac.
Okay, but I'm going to throw this out there just as a question. Because he is, a lot of people respect him in the ranks, you know? He's one of those guys who's still, like, respected amongst the ranks, even though maybe he's had a different... He's not been a right fit for something. Would you bring him on as, like, an assistant or a special assistant or something along those lines?
No! I'm not interested in anything he thinks. I'm not. If you want to have him as a glorified mascot and have him, you know, walking around the park like Ernie Banks shaking hands and being that, like, or Scottie Pippen sitting and drinking beer in the front row, as if you want to do that and just sort of a symbolic thing, that's fine. But actually being a part of a current NFL coaching staff, I'm surprised half the players even know who he is. These guys are 23 years old. You know, they've probably heard stories or seen pictures or something. It's just, I don't know. It seems to me like the way you put it and talk about this time being valuable, it's a complete waste of time. And the more I say this, the more damn you, because now I think I'm speaking it into existence because of the way the planets are going to be aligned just to have it happen because
speaking
you
of happening,
put it in my
we
head.
We got to go.
Yeah, we do. Ian Happ is going to happen next on The Score.
Can't win with him?
Yeah, man.
Can't do it. Welcome
back. Ian Happ.
It's hard to take Ian Happ out of the lineup. This guy's swinging the bat really well. He's been a staple. He's the real deal.
Happ is a switch hitter. He's got a beautiful swing. He's strong. We've seen him hit some long home runs.
Happ hits a high drive deep to left. Dickerson at the wall. It's gone! A go-ahead home run for Ian Happ on a 1-2 pitch.
Outfielder for your Chicago Cubs.
He can run. He's a very good athlete.
Now he's got all the tools.
That man at third and only one out.
That is going to be caught by Happ on the dive.
A run-saving play by Ian Happ. Spectacular catch out there in right center field. Ian goes headlong on the sinking line drive and hauls it in.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
Shout out to Nico because I saw him a few days ago. He's yoked right now. He's ripped. That dude just keeps getting stronger. It's terrifying.
I got like a sneaky, like really good big league career out of this guy. Like going to be a really good baseball player. Going to be like a top of the order bat.
He's one of the smartest baseball people I've ever met.
This being around that kid, man. Ooh.
I met Ed Howard the other day.
How was that?
Their first rounder. He's 19 years old, I think. He is ripped.
Yep.
He's really? Huge. It's like Kipnis and I were hitting with them, and we were like, are we on the same planet? Like, are we playing sports? Like, absolutely shredded. And for like an 18-year-old, like, put together, like, slapped together. Like, okay, this is great.
Ian Happ with Bernstein and Rahimi.
on 670 The Score. Welcome
back. That's a little optimism that you hear there from Ian Happ and the conversation he and the boys were having with Kyle Schwarber on the Compound Podcast. Ian Happ is on Twitter at @IHAP_1. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. What's happening, Ian? How are you?
Wonderful. How are you guys doing?
Good. I want to tell you, I got a very, very positive report from Monday from the Greater Chicago Food Depository. One of my son's best friends and longtime travel baseball teammates was one of your assistants on Monday, and he was very complimentary of both you and Jason Hayward, and thought it was just a terrific time for a great cause.
Yeah, it was awesome that they were all down there working hard. They were down there all day packing food, and Jason and I came in at different times, but we were able to visit all the stations and see everything. And just the relationship that we've had with the food bank through Connect Grocers and Quarantine Coffee, being able to see it in person for the first time and help out a little bit was really awesome, especially on MLK Day. That was special to bring it all together.
We've seen a lot of those viral pictures of the thousands of cars waiting in line to get food at the food banks. Chicago, a little more urban, so you won't see all the cars, but you will definitely see the need. What was your impression about how much they can use your help and other people's help?
Yeah, it's just an amazing operation. I think what we've been able to do with Connect Roasters since the start of, I guess it was March or April. I get April when we first started selling the coffee. And we've done over 13,000 meals with the food bank. So just the impact that we've been able to have and how much that they're able to do with so little, it really is incredible. We were packing emergency boxes, and you see what goes into that. And then, 3-pound bags of pasta and, all of these essentials that people need, especially in our community, that has been hit so hard, by this virus and this pandemic, to be able to give back, and just see how much they do within our community and how much they need our help.
So what is your current contract situation? Have you had your hearing yet? Have you had your proverbial day in court for your arbitration hearing, or is that still pending?
No. Yeah, still pending. Don't have the official date yet. So, all those cases will be in the first couple weeks of February. In limbo right now. We'll have a contract at some point, but I'm going through the process, and it's part of the job.
So you're not going to take the advice that they always say, never, ever attend your own arbitration hearing. It's because you don't want to hear your team try to tell you how much you suck to try to pay you less money. So are you actually going to be a part of it?
Yeah, we'll see. I was planning on being a part of it. It's all virtual this year. Usually the hearing would be in Arizona, but this year it's remote via Zoom. I'll probably depending on what time in February, it might be in Arizona by that time. So we'll see. I was planning on being a part of it, but you're right. You really don't want to hear the team trash you. So that's a tough line to walk.
Yeah, that was good advice you gave. It stuck with me. So you're a brave guy either way, for either sitting through it or having to hear it. I know you talked about volunteering with Jason Hayward, and you guys were there at different times, but I think his work, especially this off season and the one before, have really been notable. What can you say about Hayward's charity work and just what he's doing off the field to give back?
Yeah, he cares so much about this city. I think Jason's a pretty private guy, and he does a lot of his good works in silence, which is very admirable. And it takes guys like me talking about how awesome he is to really get everybody to realize that. And that's how I think, he prefers to do all of his work behind the scenes. He's an incredible human being. He's done so much for this city. The way that he talks about Chicago, his love for the city, he's been living here now in the off season. And I think it's something that some place that he sees himself being long-term. So, what he's done for the city, giving back, he's done, he was obviously, he was our Roberto Clemente nominee this year for the Cubs, what he's done, not just for food bank, for social injustice charities. He's really run the gamut of just supporting the city. He's always been a huge supporter of other players' charities, whether it's the Rizzo Foundation or John Lester's Never Quit. He's a great person, and he really does care about this community, and he's really ingrained himself in everything that is Chicago.
There was a really cool moment in your interview with Kyle Schwarber when you guys told him about the probability at that time when you were recording that John Lester was also going to be joining the Washington Nationals, and his really genuine excitement in that probability was palpable. It totally came through, and it's just yet another reminder of how you guys just really revere John Lester and what he's meant. And you've talked about it at length, but to hear how excited Schwarber got was really kind of a cool moment.
Yeah, it was really awesome. Whenever you have someone who's as accomplished as John is, coming over to be a part of your team, especially, for Schwarber, this is the first time he's been on a new team. And so to be able to go through that with a really good friend and mentor like John Lester, who's had to do this a couple times, I think it'll really help him. It's another familiar face with Davey, which would be really great for Schwarb. And just, John's going to take care of you. You know he's going to look after you. And then you know he's going to make the team better. He's going to go out there and compete. He's going to make 30 starts. And like I said on the podcast, John Lester in a 4 or 5 slot in the rotation is dangerous. I'll take that any day of the week. He's going to compete. He's probably going to win at least 10 games, minimum, probably 15 games for them in a 4 or 5 spot. And that's all you can ask for. He's an absolute stud.
It's a good rotation when you put it all together in Washington, where they've developed with him. When you think about Strasburg and Scherzer and Corbin, but what outside of just what we know about John Lester, what are the things that I think the teammates are going to miss the most about him? I know we've talked about it a little bit here and there, but what he meant to the Cubs, I think, stands to be repeated a couple times.
Yeah, he meant so much to the organization just because of the way that he changed the culture, the winning attitude that he brought. All he's done is win everywhere that he's been. I think the stat line is pretty incredible that he has the exact same win percentage in ERA in Boston and in Chicago, right? And his win percentage is something ridiculous over, over 600. I think it's almost, he wins 2/3 of the games that he starts. Like, that's just insane. And so he brings that mentality, and he brings the experience that it doesn't matter how it gets done. The only thing that you need to worry about is winning. He always wants to be a great teammate. He wants to be a great mentor. And I think he's going to learn, I said this on the podcast, but he's going to learn from that staff as well, because he's always trying to grow. He's always trying to get better. He's not complacent is the farthest thing from what John Lester is. And he's that guy that if he goes out and only throws 4 innings and gives up 4 or 5 runs and burns the bullpen a little bit, he feels like he let the team down. He doesn't care about himself. He doesn't care about his stat line. He cares about letting the team down and not putting the team in a position to succeed for the next week. That's something that he talked a lot about as a starting pitcher with us. Was his job was to go 7-8 innings and give the bullpen a break, and that's how they would compete in Boston, and that's how he grew up. Beckett would compete with him to have 7 or 8 innings and give the bullpen to rest, and that was something he talked about, and I think it really, it ingrained in Hendricks, it ingrained in some of the young guys that came up under him, and that wealth of knowledge around the game of baseball is something everybody's going to miss. And the conversations on the plane, him organizing team dinners and getting everybody to go out and talk baseball and talk shop, inviting guys up to his suite to have a couple beers and talk about baseball. He loves talking about the game. He loves teaching the game. And that was something just from a camaraderie standpoint as a teammate that I'll definitely miss. Not to mention our golf games.
Well, I was just going to say, and organizing the golf games and paying for guys, too. And then I love the story when Dakota was saying, you know, maybe I think it might have been was it Lester or Schwarber was like, maybe we'll pick up the tab on this one. And it turned out to be like an extra $250 or something, which for a minor league player is no small expenditure.
Yeah, that's about all your meal money for the week.
I was going to say, yeah, you're not going to eat. But the what's just the latest briefly that you're hearing about season starting on time and or what the rules are going to be and designated hitter? Do we have any more clarity on what baseball is going to look like and when it's going to start?
Yeah, there's some more clarity coming. Unfortunately, we don't know about DH and where that's going to land. I would hope to have some sort of resolution as we run into camp. But as far as the start time, everything that we're hearing is on time. Protocols are starting to get firmed up. You know, I would say that it's going to look very similar to the way that the season ended last year. I think the strictness, the testing, all of that's going to look very, very similar until some more vaccines are handed out, until players can start being vaccinated, and then we'll see if those start to ease up a little bit. But definitely the start of spring training looks to be on time, and it's a lot of work for our entire staff, for Nick Frangella, for our entire training staff to put this all together, to coordinate testing, to coordinate getting guys to camp. You know, our traveling secretary, VJ, has his hands full with this one. So I think teams are hoping that things can be a little bit more firmed up and a little bit more sure so that everybody can get their planning done, because that's the hardest part for everybody. And it falls on just a few individual shoulders. So we're trying to get everything in line to make it a little bit easier on everybody.
Speaking of testing, I wanted to let you know this is something that I found out about. Is my daughter's getting ready to head back for her second semester freshman year at Denison. They've done an unbelievable job with testing and tracing and pool testing and all they've done. And it is thanks to the Ohio State Nursing Program, who has partnered with them. And they've done the nursing students have done a ton of the work in Granville, helping them, you know, keep track of everything, going through all the data and doing the testing. So tell your mom, great work, and more power to the OSU nursing school.
I will. Today is her birthday, so that will be a nice little birthday present for her. We'll be hearing that the Ohio State nurses are doing everything that they can to help out.
They certainly are. Ian, continued good health, and look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks so much. Have a good one.
That's Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs. Always interesting stuff. But I just, how can they not know if they have a DH yet? I mean, somebody's got to know you're setting rosters here. Can we get back to Bears talk in just a second? Maybe get some input into this Singletary stuff, because I'm not done with this crap yet.
Nobody else is either. Text line is blowing up about Ferris Bueller still.
Yeah.
I think I'm laughing. I'm sorry. I cough laughed.
No, there are more people who dislike that movie than I guess I realized. Well, we're going to dive back into some Bears talk next. Keep it here. Bernstein and Rahimi on the score.